As we mentioned in the first segment here, Secretary of Defense James Mattis has resigned in somewhat a controversial resignation letter as well. Here to talk about that with us, a good friend, former Breitbart colleague, Washington reporter for One American News Network, Neil McCabe. Welcome to the Tennessee Star Report, Neil.
Hey, Michael. Glad to be with you. Good morning.
Thank you so much for getting up so early, although in Washington it's only 6:15, but thank you. I know that there are plenty of other things you could be doing this morning, 5:15 Central Time. So tell us, now, by the way, Neil, for our audience, you and I were colleagues at Breitbart. We both wrote sure. about politics and polling, had a lot of fun writing polls, working with Pat Caddell, the great Pat Caddell.
That's right.
What an interesting and fantastic, intelligent guy he is.
Well, you know, a lot of people were saying that, you know, they were surprised by the polls and the polls that got them wrong. I think it's fair to say that anybody was following those Breitbart polls that you and I were working on with Pat Caddell. We weren't surprised. I mean, we saw what was moving on in the states, and you know, it was touch and go, and the popular vote was very close, but anybody following those Breitbart polls would have known that Trump was on his way to the White House.
You also have a very interesting career. You have served for many years in the Army Reserve, and I guess you're a sergeant, still a sergeant in the Army Reserve?
Yes, I'm a I'm a staff sergeant in the Army Reserve, public affairs, but probably the highlight of my Army career is the 15 months I spent in Iraq as a combat historian, and I also spent some time at Fort Bragg with the 18th Airborne Corps. But I also spent 8 years on active duty in the Coast Guard, three of those at sea, doing drug patrols in the Caribbean. And it's been an interesting journey, Michael.
So, I mean, you really are a veteran and still involved in the military. You know what's going on. Now, you have 15 months. When were you in Iraq, Neil?
So it was March of 2009 to May of 2010, and I was based, initially I was based in Basra, but I really traveled all over the place. I was sort of a hobo soldier. I would hitch rides on convoys and Blackhawks to the different camps and do oral histories, you know, these interviews with the soldiers, but I talked to Iraqis, I talked to, you know, other people who were there. So I probably did. I did more than 150 oral history interviews for the Center for Military History, and it was a fascinating sort of intellectual enterprise, as well as sort of, you know, my part to keep the stories of these soldiers alive. I used to tell people, if you don't talk to me, you weren't here.
So how does one get the gig in the Army as a combat historian?
Well, I'm a public affairs soldier, and so the history community draws from the public affairs community because we've already been trained as photojournalists or broadcast journalists to get a job in public affairs. So I'd written for Army, you know, newspapers. I'd written for Army magazines. I'd been in a public affairs unit, and then they knew I'd studied history at UMass Boston, and so they said, "Hey, would you be up for this?" And you know, there was a 2-week school at the battlefield of Chickamauga, where instructors were dressed in Civil War uniforms, and you would sort of walk to the battlefield and then conduct these sort of interviews as a sort of a way of, you know, getting used to the sort of the vibe. I'm not sure walking the Civil War battlefield really prepared me for the realities of getting around in Iraq, but it was that in and of itself was a very interesting school.
Were there any times, Neil, when you were over in Iraq where you thought your life was in danger?
Yeah. we got rocketed a lot. That was probably the biggest deal. I probably was part of rocket attacks in 7 different places, and we used to get hit, you know, regularly in Camp Basra to the point where convoys were not allowed to stay overnight in Basra because it was considered too dangerous a place. I traveled a lot by convoy because it was easier administratively for a sergeant to get around rather than trying to get, you know, trying to get booked flights on Blackhawks and things at and C-130s. It just, because you have to put your name on the list 3 days in advance, and it's just, it was too much rigmarole. So I just found it easier to get convoys. But of course, the IED threat was out there all the time. I was never a part of a convoy that was hit by IEDs, and I would say that's probably because our tactics had improved, and you know, we knew what we were doing. And then, I mean, there were times when those rockets were pretty close, Mike.
Well, we're glad you made it safely back, and so now you report on politics and in Washington, D.C. Big news yesterday. Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis resigns. His resignation letter, I'm sure you read it, basically said, I don't agree with what you're doing, President Trump, and therefore you deserve a Secretary of Defense whose views are aligned with yours. Therefore, I'm stepping down.
Well, I think the biggest secret that everyone knew in Washington was that Mattis had to go. And depending how you felt about Trump or how you felt about Mattis, you could spin it either way, but it was not working. You know, the president was drawn to Mattis. You know, he had this nickname, Mad Dog, and Trump thought he was going to be this sort of tough guy who was going to really sort of try to reform the Pentagon and be part of how Trump was going to sort of turn around American policy, especially dealing with these overseas wars and conflicts. And it turns out Mattis wasn't like that at all. And Mattis, you know, maybe the number one thing Trump loved about Mattis was his nickname, Mad Dog. And almost immediately, Mattis started telling people, I don't like the name Mad Dog. It doesn't mean anything to me. It's not like me. Mattis was really trying to be that third term for President Barack Obama in the Pentagon, which was surprising for a lot of people because Obama had fired Mattis and basically forced him into retirement because Mattis had had a more aggressive posture towards Iran. And of course, you know, the Obama administration was trying to sort of work on literally an alliance with Iran so that we would sort of be on that Iran axis as opposed to being on sort of the Israel axis that we had been on. And so in many ways, Mattis would undercut the president and the White House messaging. There were always leaks coming out of the Pentagon to embarrass the president or to contradict the president. You could just look at something like, and how a relationship works between, you know, a Pentagon and a president. The president came back from France, said he wanted to have a parade just like they have in France. It wasn't because he was a fascist. It wasn't because he wanted to blow money. He just saw how the French people responded to a military parade. And he said, I love our military. The American people love our military. Let's have a parade in the United States also, maybe on Veterans Day. And almost immediately, the Pentagon would be leaking documents saying how much money would cost, the hassles of getting permits. And so there was nothing coming out of the Pentagon that would have backed up Trump. And so like a little thing like the parade or even transgender policy. You know, the president says, I don't want transgenders in the military. Constitution says he is the commander-in-chief. There's not a lot of wiggle room there, Mike. You're the commander-in-chief, but I don't know how else someone else is in charge there. And he says, I don't want transgenders serving in the military. Mattis treats it literally as an illegal order that he does not have to obey. And Mattis also tells people, regardless of what the president said, re-enlist any transgender personnel who want to re-enlist. In fact, encourage them to re-enlist now so that we have their contract on the books. And then there were other things, dealing with North Korea or dealing with our NATO allies. In matters big and small, Mike, Mattis was running his Pentagon as a third term of the Obama administration, and Trump was looking for a Trump Pentagon. I think that's fair to say.
Why, in his mind, did Secretary of Defense Mattis believe that he had the authority to undermine the president?
Well, I think what these guys, there's a group of generals, right? So you had Flynn, McMaster, you had Kelly, Dunford, and then, of course, Mattis. So that these generals, excepting Mike Flynn, who was a Trump loyalist, but Trump loved having generals around. And I think in Trump's head, he thought, if I have a general, he'll do what I tell him to do, and I don't have to worry about, you know, any kind of bureaucratic backsliding. And that's absolutely what did not happen. Of these three Marines, Kelly, Dunford, and Mattis, they had almost like a suicide pact where they, you know, they said if one was fired, the others were going to quit. And they would tell reporters all the time, whether it was Dunford, Kelly, or Mattis, every article that was coming out about these guys, there would be some kind of line saying, the general is very uncomfortable working for this president, but he does it for the good of the country.
Neil, can you hold over the break here? Because this is very fascinating.
Sure, go ahead.
Great. We'll be back. We're talking with Neil McCabe, political reporter in Washington for One America News. Back after this, you're listening to the Tennessee Star Report, Early Edition. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. And Michael Patrick Leahy here, 5:33 a.m., slight rain out there. Drizzle, slick roads, be careful driving in. We are talking with my good friend and former Breitbart colleague, Neil McCabe, Washington political reporter for One America News Network. And Neil, who is also an Army reservist and spent 15 months in active duty in Iraq, is telling us some eye-opening information about recently resigned Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis. So, Neil, you were saying that the Marine generals out there who came to work for President Trump, McMaster, Mattis, the other one was Dunforth, was that the third?
Yeah, Joe Dunford, the outgoing chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
They sort of had, you described it as a suicide pact, that they would, if one of them resigned, they would all go. And they somehow did not consider themselves subordinate, I guess, to the president. That's a bit shocking.
I guess what I would call it, Mike, is a regency, you know, so that, in a country where there's a monarchy and there's a child, you know, the king dies and then the prince is a boy, they have a regency where the queen or other people are sort of appointed to run the kingdom until the boy comes of age. And I think what we have, these three Marines in particular were trying to do was have a regency where at least in their parts of the military in the world, they would sort of run things. And they'd say nice things to the president, but basically treated the president like he was some kind of boy prince and that let the grown-ups handle the government part. And we saw that over and over again, particularly in the Pentagon, where it was in, April, May, when the president said, I want to get out of Syria. And the Pentagon said, we're not getting out of Syria. And then we were still in Syria. thanks for your input, Mr. President. But we're moving on with what we want to do. And you saw it certainly with General Kelly in the White House, in a lot of ways he was sort of running the White House the way he saw fit. He wasn't managing the relationships that the president cherished well. But there was a point where the president would be pulling people aside and saying, are you on my team or the Kelly team? Well, what kind of White House is that?
How do these guys get to that level in the military and then come to not understand that we are a constitutional republic where the president is the commander in chief?
Well, I think the main thing is that, with the exception of the commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard, all of the commanding generals or admirals of the different services have been promoted and nurtured by President Barack Obama. And so, in many ways, Trump is surrounded by people who for 8 years were serving another guy. And you know, they have their relationships with their other with Obama and Obama's people. They had a worldview. They would, you know, when they would be promoted for certainly the most senior ranks, the White House would be involved in an admiral general's promotion. You would be interviewed to make sure you were in line with President Obama's policies and worldview. And now, who's this guy? You know, they really looked at Trump as some kind of stranger.
So, did President Trump's announcement that we were withdrawing our 2,000 troops from Syria, did this push Mattis towards submitting his letter of resignation, or did the president say, you're out of here?
I think there's a lot of people listening right now who have been in relationships that weren't going the right way, but they're still stuck in it. And then you sort of pick a fight, and that fight with the hope that maybe this is the fight I can use to just get out of this mess. And I think Trump just kept, you know, he just thought maybe the Syria thing, maybe this is enough to make the guy quit. So it is interesting, though, Mike, you know, when you think about it, that Dunford, Kelly, and Mattis will be leaving the administration all at the same time. And don't forget, there are still rumors out that Mattis may even run for president in 2020.
I didn't know that. As a Democrat?
As an independent, and I've actually spoken to someone who's part of that effort. Mattis hasn't encouraged it, but Mattis hasn't discouraged it. And polling has been done to say, hey, if Mattis ran against Trump, he would win.
That's a bit of a shock, but that doesn't seem to make sense. When you say polling would show Mattis would win, Mattis as an independent, a Democrat, and Trump?
Well, the feeling was that first you had to sort of demilitarize Mattis, and what these consultants are concerned about is they do not want it to seem like a military takeover. And you know, don't forget that in the spring of 2016, there was a prominent Republican in sort of Bush world, a guy named John Noonan, who actually tried to do a draft Mattis effort. I mean, there's a lot of people I don't believe Mattis would win, but there are a lot of people who think he would.
That's interesting. I can tell you from the heartland, having someone selected by the president as Secretary of Defense, then resign and run against him, would not go over well.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know how much time we have left, Mike, but I do want to mention also that Mattis did try to bring in two people, Michelle Fortney, who was in charge of Obama's transition when Obama first came in. She's also the founder of the Center for New American Security, a complete left-wing activist. And Mattis tried to make her the number two at the Pentagon. And he tried to make a woman named Ann Patterson the number three at the Pentagon. That was actually blocked by Tom Cotton. Patterson was Obama's ambassador to Egypt when Mubarak was overthrown. And then Obama sent her to Pakistan, and she was the ambassador to Pakistan when bin Laden was killed. And so Mattis also wanted to bring her in. And so, you know, it's like these are just two examples of very high-profile Obama people that Mattis tried to bring into the Pentagon. In fact, with Fortney, Mattis actually brought her to meet Trump at Trump Tower during the transition, saying, "This, I want her to be my deputy." So that kind of tells you where Mattis's head was at.
Yeah. Now tell us who is. I wanted two things before we go. We got about four more minutes here. Number one, who will President Trump nominate to replace Mattis? And then second, tell us a little bit about One America News Network and how well it's doing out there and where people can watch it. Start with a replacement to Mattis.
Well, the leader in the clubhouse, Mike, is Jack Keane, the retired Army general who was one of those fathers of the surge in Iraq, who, while still on active duty, helped put together sort of that intellectual framework in 2006 that basically gave President George W. Bush the option of choosing the surge. He's currently an analyst on Fox News. He's very well respected. And so right now, I would bet maybe I wouldn't bet the ranch, but I would bet the big house on Jack Keane.
Terrific. Any other dark horse candidates?
Well, I mean, you really never know. And it's also, it's kind of a very difficult situation because people, with the way nominees are sort of treated, I think a lot of people are sort of are waiting to see how this new, what is the dynamic in the new Senate before any kind of other names have been floated. But the big name right now is Jack Keane, and that's been out there for a while.
Terrific. Now tell us a little bit about, we have one more minute, tell us about One America News Network and how people can watch it.
All right, One America News is on DirecTV, Verizon Fios, and other systems. If we're in about 35 million homes now. We're 5 years old. Our mothership is in San Diego, where our anchors are. And then we have studios in D.C. and New York. And it's like the old CNN headline news, where it's just news story after news story after news story. We do have 2 hours of sort of hosted punditry with Liz Wheeler and Graham Ledger. But basically, 22 hours a day, you go to One America News, you find out what's happening. And if anybody listening does not have One America News as part of their cable system, they need to call immediately and get a hold of their cable company and demand One America News, because we're there to provide, you know, we cover so many of the conservative and Republican events and stories and personalities that, frankly, Fox is no longer interested in.
Yeah, a very good point. I think you'll see a lot of people turning to One America News Network. Neil McCabe, good friend, former Breitbart colleague, Washington reporter for One America News Network. Thank you so very much for joining us this morning on the Tennessee Star Report.